We discussed school referendums in Wisconsin in light of the spring election last week when voters approved more than 860 million in school referendums statewide. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 1.2 billion was on the line if all 81 had passed. Did your district hold a referendum? What did it seek? Did it pass or fail? What's on your mind about school general aid, debt obligations, and school building projects? 800-642-1234. Dave Visser is school board president of Elko School District. That's in rural Langlade County in the northern part of our state with around 280 students. Dave, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. We also have Wally Liepart with us, superintendent of Gilman School District in nearby Taylor County with about 300 students. Wally, welcome to you.
And good morning to you as well. Thank you.
Good morning. Wally, I hope I'm not out of turn here, but congratulations are in order, earning your doctorate recently.
Yes, I did. I just completed that with Cardinal Stritch University out of Milwaukee. Really focused on leadership for the advancement of learning and service.
Well, Wally, let's start with you. You know, Gilman asked voters to approve a four-year non-recurring referendum. It passed. What will the district do with the $3.3 million over the years?
Yeah, so the district went for an operational referendum. So essentially what we're saying is that those funds are essential for the daily operations of the school district. We have made several budget reductions throughout the years as we've responded to our enrollment. And we are simply at a point where we have the absolute essential staff that are in the district and the revenue limit does not cover all the expense to do so.
Hmm. Does that mean like keeping lights on, keeping salaries paid? What does operational mean?
So operational means the operations of the building. Like you said, that's heat, electric, and various other mechanical issues that go along with operating a building. But yes, that is for the staffing of learning opportunities for our kids. That is teacher positions. Those are paraprofessional positions, cooks, custodians.
Well, Dave Visser, over to you on Elko School District's referendum. Three-year, non-recurring, million per year. It's operational as well, I understand.
That's correct. And we've been running these operational referendums since early 2000s.
And why do you need to do that?
Well, the way the state funding formula works, we just don't, just like Wally, we don't get enough money to run our basic services. We have declining enrollment, which cuts our funding every year. And we've tried to, just like Wally, we've tried to make cuts. And we really feel like we're at our bare bones right now with serving our kids to the best of our abilities. And we're stretching our staff pretty thin.
It seems, Dave, increasingly school districts, especially in rural areas like yours, are really forced to ask voters for approval to pay for everything like maintenance and operational construction, employee pay. Can you say more specifically, why is this happening?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, there's not one specific reason, but I know this has been an issue for a long, long time. There's been the Blue Ribbon Commission studied it with rural schools and the funding issues. You know, for our general aid for Elko, we only get $40 per student, where the, you know, the state average is like $5,500. So just
wow.
The way the formula works, we rely on our local taxpayers to pay the bill, basically. So we've been going to our taxpayers to exceed the revenue cap, like I said, since the early 2000s. We've generally been able to pass those without an issue. Generally, we do like a four-year non-recurring. This past year, we cut it back to three because we actually lost two referenda in a row. We had to go without that referendum money for a year. This past year, and it really hurt. We had to make staff reductions that we really didn't want to make, and Yeah, and cut into our fund balance to a point where we're almost down to nothing.
Mm. Wally, what do you see where you are in terms of having to go to referendum, having to ask that ballot question? What has that been like through the years in your district?
Yeah, so this is our third referendum for operations in Gilman. But we're on the same pathway that Elko is experiencing, and mainly because when revenue limits were put into place, they were designed as a stopgap measure during that period. And, you know, administrators, school boards, even the legislature had indicated at that time that they knew that they'd have to come back and take a look at it. Well, we're over 20 years past that, and they still haven't looked at that again. So when you're in a school district where you do have declining enrollment, the revenue limit formula doesn't work for you. It kind of works against you. So like what we're experiencing in Gilman, and I would assume is much like Elko, is that as enrollment declines, it looks like we have higher property value per member. And it is only a factor of the fact that we have less students. It's not that we have more property value, it's just distributed amongst fewer kids. Mm. And when that happens, then your state aid is reduced. And so we're seeing a decline in our state aid over the years. And at this time, we're more fortunate than Elko is, where we're at about 40% of our funding does still come from the state. Mm. So it really is an issue of what do we expect as being the basic needs of a school district to operate regardless of a class size or the number of students that are in the district. Because we firmly believe that there needs to be a conversation about developing a per member revenue limit that is focused on allowing every student to be educated in their own community.
Treated equally. I'm going to reintroduce both of you as we talk about school district referendums in Wisconsin. Been on the rise since the early 2000s. Wally Liepart, the superintendent of Gilman School District east of Eau Claire. Dave Visser with us, school board president of Elko, that's east of Tomahawk. You can join in. What questions do you have about school referendums? Why districts go to voters? What do you want to know about how schools use that funding? 800-642-1234. You know, the funding formula for schools is complicated. And, you know, I'm wondering, Dave, what happens when your enrollment decreases or when enrollment fluctuates? You can't just staff up and cut staff based on the ebb and flow of your class sizes.
No, you can't. And, you know, what you might reduce your, if say your enrollment drops by 10 students, you know, over a year, it's not that you can eliminate a second grade teacher because you're losing two students in this class or one student in that grade. And you know, so it's not like you see a big drop in one area. So we're down to one teacher per class in our elementary, and our high school and middle school staff cover both. And, you know, many of our staff, you don't have like four sections of one math class. So mm-hmm. you've got all these different courses. So the teachers have to teach a different class every period, which really stretches them. And, you know, they don't have much prep time because we're having trouble even filling our open positions. So they're having to cover. So it's a struggle.
You're having trouble even filling your open positions in these
Correct.
Times. Has that been pandemic related, do you think, or has that been happening even prior to the pandemic?
Even prior okay. to the pandemic, you know, it's hard to attract especially new teachers to a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that we have gotten have been just stellar. You know, they have a passion for kids and nature. You know, we're up in the what we call the lakes and the leaves. And, you know, so if we can get the right teachers that enjoy the area and have a passion for kids, that's ideal. But, you know, younger people like to be in more of the urban areas. So staffing can be an issue.
Dave Visser, school board president of Elko School District, Wally Liepart, superintendent of Gilman School District, both in the northern part of Wisconsin with referendums that were approved by voters in the spring election. School board members, what do you want voters to know about referendums? How much preparation does it take to hold one? What do you hear from constituents about school funding? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. Dozens of school referendums were approved by voters in the spring election. We're talking about their purpose on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some ballot questions involved school construction, renovation. Others involved exceeding revenue caps. Did you feel like you made an informed decision about your school referendum? Total of 16 failed, including the West Allis one that was nearly $150 million. Did your district pass a referendum? Is it worth it? What is at stake? 800-642-1234. Elko School District School Board President Dave Visser stays with us, along with Gilman School District Superintendent Wally Liepart. I want to ask you, in Gilman, your referendum passed by just a couple dozen votes, I think. What was the opposition to it, Wally?
Well, I think that we had some other referendums that are in the area, and there were individuals that were sharing their thoughts both for and against. Mm-hmm. And we did have some individuals that had indicated that that led to some confusion when it even came to our referendum. We've tried to be upfront and provide that communication, share through direct mails, community signs, our website, Facebook, to get people to understand what our need is. We have had a lot of community meetings, and we just didn't get a lot of feedback, to be honest, one way or the other. I think that we're starting to get into a trend that, you know, this was our third referendum. People understand that we have a need. And the opposition, I think, is more about a misunderstanding of that, the districts are getting so small, maybe we need to consolidate with another district. And if we do that, then I won't have to pay school property tax. Hmm. And that is just not the case. And I think that for some reason that message is very loud and strong in a lot of communities, and it's just not the case. It's just a new boundary of school district, and a school property tax is levied on all properties. So I think it's a misunderstanding of that has led to a lot of the opposition vote.
Dave, what is the educational approach you take with voters and in your district? How do you do that type of outreach and understanding about what your needs are?
Yeah, well, our district is quite large. We're over 400 square miles. So I think we have seven townships in our district. So we would attend the town meetings and give a presentation. Of course, those meetings aren't regularly well attended. So we did do direct mailings, and I think that made a positive impact. I could mirror Wally in the misunderstandings of what the referendum are for. I think our biggest opposition will tell us what you're going to spend the money on with the assumption that we're going to add new things. What new programs are you doing, or what new things are you doing? Well, we're just doing this to maintain what we already have. And that's hard to get across from people. People are used to, you have a referendum for a new building or a pool or, things like that. So it's perception that way.
And perception, too, perhaps because maybe a nearby district is doing a renovation or is doing new construction, and it might also be confusing for what is going on in my local district.
Correct. We passed a building referendum, I think it's 5 years ago now. So one of the perceptions was, well, you just ask us for that. Why didn't you, get that extra money at that point? Not realizing that that's two totally separate issues.
Yes. You know, I'm thinking about the federal pandemic relief and the ESSER funds, the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund grant program through ARPA, and where you have received that funding. I know, I think Gilman is slated to get over $1.5 million. Has that had an impact for you, Wally?
We have definitely had to answer some questions about why we have to go to a referendum when we have those funds coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And we really try to talk about what is our responsibility as a local electorate towards the kids of our district in educating them for their future. And then looking at those recovery funds as a way to position our building and our students to be successful in the event of any type of, school closure or future pandemic that might require us to respond differently inside the learning environment. So we've looked at much needed ventilation projects. We're looking at, we have experienced some learner loss. And so we've brought in additional interventionists and looking at summer school programming. And so looking at those things that would supplement the learner loss that occurred,
mm-hmm.
Look at really positioning our building to be sustainable for the next 10 to 20 years. In turn, that becomes a savings to our local taxpayers in the future.
Hmm. How about you, Dave, and the ESSER funds?
Similar thing. We're trying to do some learning recovery for a lot of our students who especially our younger elementary,
mm-hmm.
that the virtual option just didn't work real well. But a lot of those funds are limited to what you could use them for. So we can't just use them for a general classroom teacher. It has to be for intervention, physical changes to the building for like ventilation, just like Wally said. We're beefing up our online abilities. Should we have to close again? Those sorts of things.
Let's go to Rich in Rhinelander. Rich, hi. What's on your mind about school referendum?
Well, a few years back, pre-pandemic, I voted for a referendum in the Rhinelander School District. I'll try to, and I approved it, and it passed. I'll try to brief here, but I think we're reaping the outcomes of what I call three-word politics, where no new taxes have really caught on. I'm childless. I've never had any kids, but I think we're in the pandemic, we're facing the prospect of essentially a lost generation of children simply because you cannot run either politics or public facilities with the idea that, drain the swamp, no new taxes is a sensible way to look at the highly specific issues about what kids actually need in some of these districts. Property tax is not a way to fund schools. I'll leave it there and thank the gentlemen for bringing themselves to this issue.
Rich, thank you for the call. Wally, you first.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that we have individuals that see their civic responsibility and engagement that goes beyond just what happens within their own home, but what is for the better good of our communities. And really a thriving school is a thriving community. That's why I advocate for us looking at ways that whether it's through state aid or through just revenue limit purposes, that we design a funding structure that allows us to just do what we're trying to do in Gilman and Elko and many other school districts across the state. And that is just to continue to provide a high quality education and learning environment for kids and not have to be at the whims of whatever persuasions are out in our communities that would maybe not allow for us to pass a referendum in the future.
Dave, do you see any hope, any movement on this issue of how you fund your local schools in a rural area?
Well, I've been on the school board for, I think, about 16 years. And like I said before, this has been an ongoing issue. And I guess I haven't seen much will by our legislatures to fix the problem. And the Rich from Rhinelander, that's the district just north of us. So if we wouldn't be able to pass referendums, we would have to dissolve, and many of our kids would go to Rhinelander. And I know that Rhinelander's mill rate is a lot higher than ours. So our local property taxes would go up for those people in that, that would become the Rhinelander school district. So that was also an issue that we had to pass along to our voters.
Thank you both for this conversation. Dave Visser, school board president of Elko School District, Wally Liepart, superintendent of Gilman School District, both in northern Wisconsin. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We're reflecting on school referendums on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So state law limits school boards to having no more than two referendums in a calendar year, natural disaster being the exception to that. In the spring election, districts put forth 81 referendums, 65 passing. What's on your mind about them? What do you want to know about school funding formulas? 800-642-1234. Dan Rossmiller is Director of Government Relations for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Dan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. We just heard two very personal stories of school districts really making it, scraping by on operational-related referendums. And I'm just wondering, is this a common problem in Wisconsin school districts?
Well, unfortunately, I think it is becoming a common problem, and it's particularly a problem in the type of district that you heard from. Smaller rural districts that are experiencing declining enrollment are really being hit by our funding formula. And you heard a couple allusions to that, and let me, if I can, talk a little bit about the way we fund schools in Wisconsin and why that's such a problem for these smaller rural districts.
Please, yes.
Okay. There are really two things that people need to know about. One is the state funding formula, and the other is the revenue limit, and I'll get to the revenue limit in a moment. Most of the money that the state sends to local public school districts is based on their property wealth per pupil. It's an attempt to equalize the property tax burden statewide. And what it means is that districts that have a high property value per pupil receive less from the state, and districts that have a lower property value per pupil receive more from the state. So what's happening in these rural districts is, as enrollment goes down, even if property value stays the same, they begin to look more wealthy to the formula. They begin to look like they need less aid to combat property tax levels. And so over time, these districts are receiving less of their budget from the state and have to go to their local taxpayers for more of their budget. Now, layered on top of that are the revenue limits, which are a control on how much money the district can raise from that state aid and local property taxes. So if the state increases that revenue limit in those kinds of districts, if it allows an adjustment, which it typically has, it didn't in the past budget, but it typically has, much of that additional money that the school district can raise comes from property taxpayers, because the state is not funding at the level that it may have previously, or at the level that a typical school district might receive. You heard Wally Liepart and Gilman talk about how they're not quite at the level of Elko yet, but it's only 40%. And so given that our goal in the state has been to fund 2/3 of the school cost, Gilman is considerably below that, and Elko at, I think I heard about $40 per pupil is way below that.
Right. We're nowhere near two-thirds. And, you know, we see, Wisconsin, an aging population. We see, younger people, moving elsewhere or, districts shrinking and perhaps having to dissolve. What does that mean? What pressures are there on the funding formula when you have that type of demographic situation going on in Wisconsin?
It's a problem. It's not a new problem, but it's one that continues. Our funding formula was created in post-World War II era. And for most of that time, up until the early 2000s, the number of students in our state was increasing. And that funding formula worked well when we had a stable or growing student population. But now in the rural areas, with, as you said, an aging population that is largely on fixed incomes. And people can pay their property taxes from two sources. They can either pay it from their current income or they can pay it from their savings. As your current income in retirement becomes fixed, you're having to dip into savings more and more. And that's causing, I think, some resistance to paying for schools and other services, particularly among people who are so old that they don't any longer have students in school and children in school. When I was a lad back in the 60s and 70s, about every other house had children in school. And over time, as family size has shrunk and people are living longer, that figure is down. In some communities, it's only 1 in 4 or 1 in 3. And so, we depend upon grandparents and people like the caller from Rhinelander who care about the future of our state and the well-being of our young people and getting them a quality education to fund our schools. And increasingly that is falling upon local taxpayers to make those decisions. When they go to vote on a revenue limit referendum, they're essentially voting to tax themselves more. Because for whatever reason, the state the limits that the state have set are not working for their district in terms of being able to maintain the programs and staffing that the schools need.
Dan Rossmiller with us, Director of Government Relations for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, as we discuss the role of school referendums, the situation with declining enrollments, and what you see in your district, 800-642-1234. Dan, looking at this past spring election, 81 school districts held referendums in Wisconsin, asking for more than $1.2 billion. Pretty typical for a spring election, or do you see more and more referendums on the ballots?
That's an interesting question. Back in the 2017-19 budget, the legislature changed the law about holding school referendums and said two things. One is that you can only put two questions before the voters per year.
Yes.
And you can only schedule those referendum questions for a regularly scheduled election. So in an odd-numbered year, when we don't have the fall partisan elections, there are only the two elections in the spring, the spring primary and the April election. So referendums in those even numbered years are concentrated in that relatively short time period. In an even numbered year, you have four opportunities. You have the spring primary and the April election, and then you have the fall primary in August and the November election. So there are more opportunities in an even number than there are in an odd numbered year. With regard to revenue limits, the real tricky thing for schools is that what you're doing is increasing the property tax levy. And the way to collect that is on property tax bills that go out in December. Mm-hmm. So if you don't pass your referendum in April, let's say of an odd numbered year, you miss that year's property tax bills, and you have to wait until the following year to go to referendum, which means you've essentially skipped a year and you're 2 years out in terms of your when you can actually collect that money on property tax bills.
It's like a full cycle has to pass then before you can get before voters again.
Correct. So I think school districts spend a fair amount of time trying to figure out, number one, what are our needs? What is the amount we need to ask for? How much is declining enrollment affecting our revenue limit? Because a district's overall revenue limit, while it is often expressed as a per pupil amount, when you take all the students together, that's what the district has available to it for the district revenue limit. Mm-hmm. And as enrollment goes down, that number goes down, and that's what's triggering these revenue limit referendums. So you have to figure out what your needs are, what you think the public will support, what's reasonable, and when you're going to go to the ballot. And you need to do that at least 70 days before the actual election. You have to pass a resolution 10 weeks before the election. So there's a lot of thought that goes into this. And I know this is not a decision that local school boards take lightly. In every case, it's a local decision, and it's based on what the school board and the school administration collectively think is in the best interest of the students and the community and is in keeping with the community's values about education.
It seems increasingly a lot is on the line. It's not a swimming pool here or a new building there. What are the options for schools if their referendum fails?
Well, I think you heard in the case of Elko what the options were. They had to make cuts in staff, and a lot of these districts, particularly the smaller districts, they're down to one teacher per grade level. Mm-hmm. You can't just cut. Well, maybe you can in some cases. Maybe you can consolidate and have a joint, first and second grade class. But that's a difficult decision. And, what does that do to the learning opportunities for students in that classroom? Are they as good as if they had separate first and second grade classes? And then when you get to the high school level, can you continue to offer the kind of curriculum that meets state graduation standards and offers the kind of electives in the area of career and technical education and foreign language, arts, music, and things like that, that are part of a well-rounded education and help students explore career options and what they want to do when they leave school. So these are not easy decisions, and I commend all of the school boards that have to wrestle with them. I also want to thank all the voters that have been so supportive of their local school districts.
Dan Rossmiller leads government relations for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. You can join in. Did your district go to a referendum in the spring election? Did you feel properly educated on what was at stake? Have you felt an uptick in school referendums on the ballot? What do you make of it? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dan Rossmiller here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Dan Rossmiller from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, looking at trends in school referendums around the state, what schools think they need in order to operate and fulfill the educational needs of their districts. Still time to talk about these ballot questions, what approach your district has taken in these times. 800-642-1234. Dan Rossmiller with us for about 10 more minutes. Dan, we heard from David and Madison, called in, couldn't stick around, was wondering when they hear the superintendent referencing they're getting state aid at $40 per student. David wants some clarification. Is that $40 per student per year, per day? David said this is a really important difference and wants to know.
Yeah, when we talk about aid to public schools, we're generally talking about on a school year basis. So that would be $40 per pupil per school year. And what we're talking about there is the general aid that I spoke of. By far the overwhelming bulk of the money that goes out to school districts, probably 85 to 90% goes out under that general aid formula. And the biggest chunk of that, again, about 90%, goes out based on property value per pupil. Mm. So in a district like Elko, where they're, you know, in the Lake Country of Northern Wisconsin, you have relatively few students, but you have lake homes and other vacation properties that are fairly valuable and sought after. And so that drives up the property wealth behind each pupil in a district like that, to the point where the formula, which looks at property wealth as an indicator of how much the state needs to share, and it doesn't produce very much for that district. That should be distinguished from a recent innovation called per pupil categorical aid that is provided to schools. And I believe it's about $742 per pupil that every district receives from the state. That money is not subject to the revenue limit, and that leads to a whole nother discussion. Hmm. Now, in this past state budget, the legislature increased neither that per pupil categorical aid nor made an adjustment to the revenue limits. So although the state put more money into the formula, that money didn't translate into spending. It translated into property tax relief. And maybe I should explain the revenue limits and why they pinch a little bit.
Well, and if we could just pause right here, because talking about vacation homes and the impact of that, you know, considering like a Lake Geneva might be an example, perhaps in Door County, you know, you have where some super expensive vacation homes, but also where you have, you know, some elementary schools where most of the children are in free and reduced lunch. So what happens then for that funding formula?
Well, the funding formula does not recognize income levels at all. It doesn't recognize children in poverty. That's a battle that's been going on. That's something that the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding discussed. It's never gotten over the hump, so to speak. Hmm. So it's really what the state formula looks at is property value. And, you know, those mansions on Lake Geneva really distort the property value behind each one of those students. And the funny thing about the revenue limit referendums, which control what the district can spend, what its budget can be, mm-hmm. is that many of those vacation homeowners are not voters in those districts. So people of relatively modest means end up having to vote to tax themselves more. They're the ones that get to say, the full year residents of a district. And for them, it's often a very difficult decision. You know, can I afford to vote to tax myself more on my property tax bill? The property tax is a, you know, it's not like the sales tax that you pay bit by bit every time you buy something. It comes due once a year, and it's very visible. And if you don't plan for it, it can be a big hit to your budget.
So going back then to the revenue caps, the revenue limit sure. law, are state revenue limits, is this common? Is this commonplace in other parts of the country as well?
There are some limits on taxing authority by school districts around the country, but I'm not aware of anything that operates quite like our revenue limit. Our revenue limit is not a limit on property taxes per se, but it operates in much that way. So if I could, you know, we have levy limits on our municipal governments, our county, city, village, and town, and they are prevented from increasing their levy by more than the percentage change in their equalized value, mm-hmm. their property value due to new construction, less any prior improvements that are removed from the tax base. So they're tied to growth in property value. That doesn't operate for schools that way. It's a fixed amount expressed on a per pupil basis, and it's a different amount in every district in the state. This goes back to 1993-94. The spending that a district is allowed under the revenue limit from that combination of state general aid and property taxes is largely set at where the district spending level was way back, you know, before the internet was a thing, before computers were in classrooms. And the only way that districts can adjust that relative to their previous history or to other districts is by going to their voters and asking for approval to raise more money under the revenue limit. And that happens in the referendum process.
As we start to wrap up here, Dan, I'm wondering, what advice do you have for districts who are caught in this cycle, if you could say it that way, of having to continually go to voters for a referendum?
It's a difficult decision. I think districts are doing the best they can at educating their voters. The situation that Wally Leapart described in Gilman, they are on a continual cycle now where they just plan that they're going to have to go to the voters and ask them for money on a periodic basis when one of their referendums, and they're doing referendums on a temporary basis called a non-recurring referendum. When that authority to spend expires, they're going to have to go back to the voters again, or they're going to have to make drastic cuts in their programs and staff, and that could jeopardize the ability to continue the district as is. So I think communicate with your community long before you need to go to them to ask them to approve a referendum. Make sure that you're laying the groundwork, getting your arguments together. Don't wait till the last minute. And, you know, talk about the good things that are happening in your schools. Talk about the successes that you're having, not just the challenges. And stay positive. I hope that through my work and the work of others who lobby the legislature that we'll get some relief. I think that there is a recognition that the legislature probably ought to have done something this time around with revenue limits or per pupil aid to give districts some additional spending authority. I'm hopeful that in the next budget we'll see that, but with all the federal money that came in, that kind of swamped our small boat in the discussion. And, you know, districts are wise not to use that federal money, which is one-time money, to fund ongoing expenditures. Don't give teachers a permanent salary increase, even though you're trying to attract and retain teachers using that one-time
money. Dan, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome, Kate.
Dan Rossmiller, Director of Government Relations for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Earlier, we talked with Wally Leapart, the superintendent of Gilman School District, and Dave Visser, the school board president of Elko School District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.